All right, so picture this, you know, like a tragic accident happens.
Yeah.
But it happens just across state lines, and then you're told, well, sorry, you can't sue for wrongful death just because of where it took place.
Oh, wow.
Pretty unfair, right?
Yeah, sounds like it.
Well, that's the kind of scenario that the Supreme Court had to tackle in Hughes v. Fetter, which really delves into how states are supposed to respect each other's laws.
Yeah, it really throws a wrench into things, doesn't it? I mean, this all boils down to the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution. And, you know, you've provided us with so much to dig into for this deep dive. Legal briefs, case summaries, the works.
Definitely someone who did their homework. So, this full faith and credit clause, what's the gist of it?
Well, basically, it says states can't just ignore each other's laws and court decisions, but figuring out exactly where the line is, well, that can get pretty tricky.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Absolutely. And Hughes v. Fetter is a perfect example of that. It's a case about a Wisconsin man who's tragically killed in a car accident, but it happened in Illinois. Now, his family wants to sue the driver, who is also from Wisconsin, but they want to sue in a Wisconsin court.
Makes sense. Same state. Seems like the most logical place to handle it.
You'd think so, right? But here's the catch. Wisconsin had this law that said their courts could only hear wrongful death cases if the death actually happened within Wisconsin's borders.
So even though everyone involved was from Wisconsin, the fact that the accident happened over the border in Illinois, that meant they couldn't sue in their own state.
Exactly. It's like Wisconsin was saying, hey, we're not against wrongful death lawsuits in general, but we don't like the ones that come from events outside our state.
That's what I call legal cherry picking. So I'm already seeing how this is setting up for a major constitutional clash.
Oh, absolutely. You've got Wisconsin wanting to control its own court system, but then you have this constitutional requirement for states to respect each other's laws, a real dilemma.
So how did the Supreme Court ultimately untangle this mess? Did they let Wisconsin just shut the door on this family's lawsuit?
No, they didn't. The court sided with the victim's family, saying Wisconsin couldn't just refuse to hear the case simply because it was based on an Illinois law.
Okay, so a win for interstate cooperation then. Seems like a pretty clear victory for the full faith and credit clause.
Well, not everyone on the court saw it that way. You see, there's a fascinating dissenting opinion from Justice Frankfurter that really digs into the counterarguments.
Okay, here's where things always get interesting for me. What was Frankfurter's perspective? Was he, like, totally against applying out-of-state laws?
Not quite. His concern wasn't so much about states never applying another state's law, but more about the practical challenges it could create.
Okay, I can see where he's coming from there. You know, trying to apply legal concepts from another state, especially if they have different legal traditions, could get pretty tricky.
Exactly. And that's one point you specifically brought up. Like, what if a state has to grapple with a law from another state that doesn't have a clear equivalent in their own system? And in fact, in the briefs, there's even some discussion about how a specific concept in the Illinois wrongful death statute just wasn't mirrored in Wisconsin law.
So you could have a situation where a Wisconsin court is trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. That definitely
Hello.
sounds messy.
Exactly. And that's not all. Frankfurter also brought up the whole issue of logistics. He argued that forcing states to apply out-of-state laws could lead to all sorts of headaches when it comes to gathering evidence and getting witnesses, especially if they're located across state lines.
Yeah, those are valid points. It's easy to get lost in the high-level constitutional arguments and forget about the nuts and bolts of actually making it all work in practice.
Right. And that's why Frankfurter's dissent is so thought-provoking. He's not saying the full faith and credit clause is unimportant, but he is saying, hey, let's be realistic about what this could mean on the ground.
So it sounds like he's advocating for a more, well, nuanced approach, recognizing that sometimes applying another state's law might just be more trouble than it's worth. But even with those concerns, the majority of the courts still felt Wisconsin couldn't just slam the door on this case.
That's right. They're basically drawing a line in the sand, making it clear that states can't just create arbitrary rules to block lawsuits from other states. There needs to be a solid, non-discriminatory reason.
So I'm sensing a bit of a theme here, this whole idea that state autonomy isn't absolute. It has to operate within the bigger picture of the Constitution. It's like a constant push and pull.
Absolutely. And that's what makes Hughes v. Fetter so fascinating. It's not just about this one wrongful death lawsuit. It's about the fundamental balance of power in our whole federal system.
Okay, I'm already seeing how this goes way beyond the specifics of this case. It really touches on all these big questions about the relationship between state and federal power, the limits of state autonomy, and the very nature of our legal system.
And we're just scratching the surface. There's so much more to unpack here about what this case means and how it's still shaping legal debates today. But before we go there, I think it would be helpful to take a step back and really dive into the full faith and credit clause itself. You know, give our listeners a solid understanding of what it actually says and why it's so crucial to our legal system.
Great point. It's easy to get lost in the specifics of a case without taking the time to understand the bigger legal principles at play. So give us the rundown on this full faith and credit clause. What's the heart of it?
Well, imagine you get married in one state and then you move to another. And for whatever reason, they don't recognize your marriage. Chaos, right?
Yeah, total chaos.
That's exactly the kind of situation the full faith and credit clause is meant to prevent. You see, it's found in Article 4 of the Constitution, and it essentially ensures that states respect and uphold the laws and judicial decisions of other states.
It's like a legal handshake between states, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, we'll honor your rules and you honor ours.
That's a great way to put it. It's all about maintaining order and predictability in our legal system. I mean, without it, imagine the nightmare of trying to enforce a contract or a court judgment across state lines.
Yeah, no one wants a legal free-for-all. So no legal free-for-all thanks to the full faith and credit clause.
Yeah.
But how did the Supreme Court specifically apply it in Hughes v. Fetter? You know, recognizing a marriage is one thing, but what about applying a whole other state's law?
Ah, that's where things get really interesting. The court had to wrestle with the scope of the clause. You know, does it only apply to final judgments that a court hands down? Or does it also extend to the actual laws themselves, like the Illinois wrongful death statute?
That's a tricky distinction. I mean, a statute is just a law in the books. It's not an order from a court.
Exactly. And the court's interpretation here is key. They basically said, look, if we're going to take the full faith and credit clause seriously, it can't just be about judgments. It has to include the underlying laws, too.
Otherwise, states could just come up with all sorts of procedural roadblocks to avoid applying other states' laws.
Exactly. They recognized that the clause was meant to create a sense of harmony and cooperation between states. That means honoring the substance of each other's laws, not just the final outcomes.
So they basically broadened the scope to include actual statutes. That sounds like a pretty big deal.
It was. It was basically the court saying, Wisconsin, you can't just ignore this Illinois wrongful death statute. It's a legitimate law passed by a proper legislature, and you're constitutionally obligated to respect it.
No more cherry-picking laws. That definitely pushes the idea of a more unified and consistent legal system across the country.
And that's precisely what the court was aiming for. They were looking beyond the letter of the law to uphold the broader purpose of the full faith and credit clause, that whole idea of legal unity across state lines. And they decided that Wisconsin's policy of completely excluding cases just because of where the death happened, well, that just didn't fit that vision.
Okay, so we've got this complex interplay between the full faith and credit clause, state versus federal power. But before we get too deep into that, there's another legal concept we should touch on. It's called forum non-convenience. Can you give us a quick explanation of what that means and how it ties into all of this?
Absolutely. Forum non-convenience is basically a legal doctrine that lets a court say, you know what, we're not going to hear this case, even if they technically could. If they believe there's another court, that would be a more convenient and appropriate place. It's about efficiency, you know, making sure the lawsuit is handled in the most logical place.
So it's not about whether they can hear it, but whether they should. Like, let's say you sue someone in Alaska for a fender bender that happened in Florida. The Alaska court might be like, wouldn't it make more sense to have this in Florida where the accident was and where all the witnesses are?
Perfect example. It's about practicality and finding the best forum for a fair and efficient trial. Now, in Hughes v. Fetter, Wisconsin wasn't claiming that their court was inconvenient. They weren't saying it was too hard to get witnesses from Illinois or anything like that. Their whole argument was based on that state law. You know, we don't touch cases involving deaths outside Wisconsin.
So the hard line, not about convenience.
Exactly. And that's a key difference because the Supreme Court found that this flat out refusal based only on where the death occurred, that went against the very heart of the full faith and credit clause.
So it wasn't that they couldn't decline to hear the case, but they couldn't decline for that reason.
Exactly. The court saw Wisconsin's policy as discriminatory because it was targeting cases based on the location of the death. It wasn't about finding the most practical venue. It was about shutting out claims that stemmed from out-of-state laws. And that, the court said, just wouldn't fly under the full faith and credit clause.
Okay, so we've got this whole intricate web of the full faith and credit clause, state versus federal power, and now this forum non-convenience concept. It's like a legal puzzle.
And we've only just started to put the pieces together. Welcome back to our deep dive into Hughes v. Fetter.
Where we're really getting into not just the case itself, but what it tells us about this whole balance between state and federal power in our legal system, you know.
Exactly. And that's where this idea of federalism really comes in. You know, Hughes v. Fetter is a prime example of how the Supreme Court has to walk this tightrope between respecting the powers of the states while also upholding the Constitution.
Right. It's that push and pull we talked about. States wanting to assert their own authority, but also having to work within the framework of the Constitution.
Right. Precisely. And the full faith and credit clause is right in the middle of all that. It's this mechanism for trying to strike a balance, ensuring some consistency across state lines without totally wiping out the autonomy of individual states.
So where does Hughes v. Fetter fit into that whole balancing act? It seems like Wisconsin was trying to flex its muscles a little bit, saying, we get to decide what our courts can and can't do.
That's exactly what they were arguing. And, you know, there's a valid point there about state sovereignty. The whole concept of federalism is about dividing power between the national government and the states.
Right. The states aren't just puppets of the federal government. They have their own areas of authority.
Absolutely. But then you have the Constitution, which is like the ultimate rule book for our entire system. And the full faith and credit clause is right there in that rule book telling states, hey, you can't just disregard each other's laws and court decisions.
It's like the Constitution is saying, OK, states, you've got some freedom, but you've got to play nice with each other.
That's a great way to put it. And in Hughes v. Fetter, the Supreme Court essentially stepped in and said, Wisconsin, you've gone a little too far with that freedom. You can't just create a rule specifically designed to discriminate against laws from other states.
So it wasn't just about whether they had the power to refuse, but the reason for their refusal. They were basically trying to pull rank just because the accident happened over the state line.
Exactly. The court made it very clear that states need a legitimate, non-discriminatory reason for refusing to enforce another state's law. It can't be a we don't like your laws situation.
Good reminder that state power isn't unlimited. It has to operate within the Constitution.
Precisely. And that's why Hughes v. Fetter is such a big deal. It really helps define those boundaries of state authority and reinforces the idea that the Constitution is supreme. It's like the Supreme Court being the referee, making sure the states are following the rules and that balance is maintained.
Okay, I'm seeing how this is so much bigger than just that wrongful death lawsuit. Mm-hmm. It really goes to the core of how our system is set up. You mentioned earlier that Justice Frankfurter had some strong opinions about this case. What was his take on all of this?
Well, Frankfurter was a big believer in federalism. He felt strongly about respecting the autonomy of states and letting them experiment with different ways of governing. He actually famously referred to states as laboratories of democracy, highlighting that it's good to have different states try out different policies.
So he saw value in letting states do their own thing, even if it meant some differences in laws across the country.
Exactly. He felt a certain amount of diversity and experimentation was good for our democracy. Now, in Hughes v. Fetter, he argued that Wisconsin did have a legitimate reason for not wanting to hear this case, pointing to the potential complexity of applying another state's laws, especially with something like wrongful death, where state laws can be very different.
So it wasn't that he thought Wisconsin was right to discriminate against out-of-state claims, but he had concerns about how practical it would be to actually apply a different state's law.
Right. He wasn't saying never apply another state's law, but he was cautioning the court to consider the potential problems. Like, think about a Wisconsin court having to figure out and apply legal concepts from Illinois law that they might not be familiar with.
It's like being thrown into a cooking show and being told to make some dish you've never even heard of with ingredients you don't know.
Exactly. On top of that, Frankfurter was worried about the logistics of things like getting evidence and witnesses who might be all the way over in another state.
Yeah, I can see how that could be a real headache. Sometimes it's easy to forget about the practical side of things when you're talking about these big legal theories.
Right. And that's what's so interesting about Frankfurter's dissent. He's urging the court to think about the real-world impact of their decisions.
So he's going for a more pragmatic approach, recognizing that sometimes applying another state's law might cause more problems than it solves. But even with those concerns, the majority of the court still felt that Wisconsin had crossed a line with this blanket rule about cases from outside the state.
That's right. They were basically saying that the full faith and credit clause isn't just a suggestion, it's a core principle that requires states to meaningfully engage with each other's legal systems. It doesn't mean always applying another state's law, but there needs to be a good, non-discriminatory reason for not doing so.
It's fascinating how this case makes us think about this tension between having a unified legal system for the whole country and the reality of 50 different states, each with their own set of laws and procedures.
Absolutely. That's the challenge of federalism. It's this constant balancing act, trying to find that sweet spot between state autonomy and national cohesion.
We need a legal GPS to navigate this.
Well, maybe not a GPS, but a good compass might be helpful. And that's where the Supreme Court comes in. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who have to interpret the Constitution and set the boundaries for how all these different interests work together.
So even though this case is from way back in 1951, it's still relevant because it speaks to these core tensions that are built into our system.
Absolutely. The issues in Hughes v. Fetter are timeless. They're about the nature of federalism, the limits of state power, the role of the Supreme Court questions that will keep being debated.
It sounds like this case is a real treasure trove for legal scholars and anyone who wants to understand how our system really works. But before we move on, I want to make sure we've covered all the bases, we've talked about the facts, the majority opinion, Frankfurter's dissent, even delved into federalism. But we haven't really touched on the practical consequences of the decision. How did Hughes v. Fetter actually change things in the real world?
That's a great question. It's important because legal decisions don't just exist out there on their own. They affect people's lives. In Hughes v. Fetter, the court's decision had a major impact on cases between states. It basically closed a loophole that states were using to get around applying laws from other states.
So before Hughes v. Fetter, a state could just say, nope, we don't hear cases about things that happened outside our borders, and that was it.
Pretty much, yes. But after Hughes, that wasn't good enough anymore. States could no longer just refuse to hear a case because it was about something that happened in another state or involved a law from another state.
So it made things fairer for the people bringing the lawsuits, making sure they weren't denied justice just because of where something happened.
Exactly. It emphasized that courts should be focusing on the substance of a case, the actual claims, not just where things took place geographically.
So in a way, it was a win for the idea of a unified national legal system, a step towards consistency and fairness across states.
Absolutely. It reinforced the principle that state courts are part of a larger system, and they can't just disregard the laws and judgments of other states.
But didn't the court also acknowledge that there might be valid reasons for a state to decline to hear a case from another state? What about those concerns Frankfurter brought up about inconvenience? Or the difficulties of applying a law from a different state.
You're right. The court didn't make a hard and fast rule that states always have to apply other states' laws. They acknowledged there might be situations where applying another state's law would be really impractical or unfair.
So, like that fender bender in Florida, but you're suing in Alaska, and all the witnesses and evidence are in Florida, it would make sense for the Alaska court to say, this really belongs in Florida.
Exactly. That's a valid use of forum nonconvenience. The Alaska court isn't saying they don't recognize Florida law. They're saying there's a better place for that case to be heard. But what the court emphasized in Hughes v. Fetter is that these exceptions have to be based on real reasons, not just a general refusal to deal with another state's legal system.
So they basically flipped the burden of proof.
Fair.
Instead of the person suing having to justify why their case should be heard in a certain state, now the state has to give a good reason why it shouldn't.
That's a great way to put it. Hughes v. Fetter made it a lot harder for states to avoid their obligations under the full faith and credit clause. They can't just put up procedural roadblocks without a solid reason.
It's really interesting how this seemingly simple case about a wrongful death lawsuit has had such a big impact on our legal system, like a pebble being dropped into a pond, creating ripples.
And those ripples are still being felt today as courts figure out what Hughes v. Fetter means in different situations. But before we look at those ripples, there's one more important concept to talk about. Remember that phrase Frankfurter used? Laboratories of democracy.
Oh yeah, I'm curious about that. It sounds catchy, but what does it actually mean? What are the good and bad things about allowing states to experiment with different laws?
That's a question that gets to the heart of what makes our federal system so unique and, well, complicated. On the one hand, letting states be laboratories of democracy encourages new ideas and allows laws to be tailored to different needs. It avoids a one-size-fits-all approach that might not work for every state.
So instead of one federal rule for everyone, it allows for more flexibility and customization based on what's going on in each state.
Exactly. A state with a lot of rural areas might have different priorities for things like roads and farms than a state with a lot of cities. Or a state with a big tech industry might do things differently when it comes to data privacy or intellectual property.
It's like every state gets to run its own experiment and see what works best. And if those solutions are good, other states can adopt them too, right?
Yep. That's called policy diffusion, the spread of successful ideas. We see it all the time with things like education, healthcare, and environmental regulations. States learn from each other, which can lead to better policies overall.
So it's a built-in way to try new things and share what works. But I imagine there are also some downsides to this decentralized approach, aren't there?
Of course, there's no such thing as a perfect system. This laboratory of democracy model has its issues. One of the biggest worries is inconsistency and inequality across the country. If states have very different laws about things like criminal justice, social welfare, or environmental protection, it can create a situation where your rights and protections depend on where you live.
That does sound unfair. I mean, different tax rates or traffic laws, okay, but what if one state decides to restrict voting rights or discriminate against certain groups?
Those are serious concerns. And these differences can create a race to the bottom, where states feel pressure to lower their standards to attract businesses or compete.
Like a game of legal limbo, where everyone's trying to bend over backwards further than the next.
Exactly. And then you have the added headache for people and businesses that operate in multiple states. Imagine running a trucking company or selling stuff online and having to follow a different set of rules in each state.
Sounds like a logistical nightmare. So it seems like we're always trying to find that balance, getting the benefits of states experimenting, but also avoiding too much inequality, inefficiency, or just plain chaos.
You got it. And that's where the federal government comes in, playing a mediating role. The Constitution, through things like the Full Faith and Credit Clause and the Commerce Clause, provides a framework for some level of uniformity and cooperation between states. It's a delicate dance, but it's what makes our system so interesting and resilient.
Yeah, this has really opened my eyes to all the nuances of this federalism debate.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as simple as saying states should have all the power or the federal government should. It's about finding that right mix to support both individual freedom and the well-being of everyone.
Well said. Cases like Hughes v. Fetter show us how that balancing act works in real life.
I'm definitely feeling a lot more informed about federalism and the Full Faith and Credit Clause. But we're not quite done with this deep dive yet. We still need to look at the long-term impact of Hughes v. Fetter and how its ideas still influence legal debates today. And we're back for the final part of our deep dive into Hughes v. Fetter. We've really gone through a lot, from the details of the case itself to these broader questions about federalism and the Full Faith and Credit Clause.
It's been quite the journey, hasn't it? We've seen how a seemingly simple question about a wrongful death lawsuit can really open up this whole Pandora's box of constitutional issues.
Exactly. But before we wrap things up, I'm really curious about the lasting impact of this case. You know, we've said that Hughes v. Fetter was this landmark decision, but how did it actually change things in the legal world beyond the people directly involved in the case?
Mm-hmm.
Did it lead to other important cases or developments?
Oh, absolutely. Hughes v. Fetter didn't just settle one dispute. It set a precedent that had a big influence on courts and how they handle conflicts between state laws. Think of it like dropping a pebble into a pond. Those ripples just spread outward.
So it wasn't just a one-time thing. It had this lasting effect on how we understand and apply the Full Faith and Credit Clause. It's like a legal domino effect.
Exactly. Hughes v. Fetter sent a clear message to state courts. You can't just reject lawsuits from other states without a really good reason. And that reason can't be something like we don't want to apply someone else's laws. It has to be something much stronger than that.
So it raised the bar for states trying to avoid cases coming from outside their borders. No more not in my backyard approach to justice.
Right. It made states think more carefully about how they handle legal fights between states. They have to make sure they're not discriminating against other states' laws or putting up unfair barriers for people trying to use their courts.
Okay, so we have this important decision that sets a powerful example. But how did that actually play out in the real world? Are there any specific cases that show the impact of Hughes v. Fetter, cases where those ripples actually reach the shore.
Oh, there are plenty of examples. One that really stands out is Nevada v. Hall, a case the Supreme Court decided back in 1979.
Ooh, another Supreme Court case. Tell me more. What was going on there?
Well, Nevada v. Hall also involved a car accident, but this one happened in California. The interesting thing is the defendant wasn't just some regular person. It was the state of Nevada itself.
Wait, you can sue a whole state? That's pretty wild. What happened?
So a California resident was seriously hurt when his car was hit by a vehicle that belonged to the University of Nevada. He sued in California, but Nevada said, hold on, California courts can't hear this case because Nevada law limits how much money you can sue the state for.
So Nevada was basically saying, even if it's our fault, you can only get this much money from us because of our state law.
That's the gist of it. They were using their state sovereign immunity, the idea that you can't sue a state without its permission, to try and protect themselves from a bigger payout in a California court.
And what did the Supreme Court say about that? Did California have to follow Nevada's rules?
Nope, they didn't. The Supreme Court sided with the person who was injured. They said the full faith and credit clause didn't require California to go along with Nevada's limit on damages. It was like they told California, you have your own legal system. You don't have to bend over backward to accommodate another state's rules, even if that state is the one being sued.
Wow, so they really reinforce what they said in Hughes v. Fetter. States can't just hide behind their own laws when they're being sued in another state.
Exactly. Nevada v. Hall made it even clearer that states can't just claim immunity when they're facing lawsuits in other states. It built on Hughes v. Fetter and showed that the full faith and credit clause isn't just about recognizing judgments. It's about making things fairer when resolving disputes between states.
So another point for a more unified legal system. States have to play by the rules and respect each other's processes.
Exactly. It shows that the court is committed to making the full faith and credit clause meaningful, ensuring it's a powerful tool for fairness and accountability between states.
So we have Nevada v. Hall carrying on the legacy of Hughes v. Fetter. Are there any other areas of law that have been shaped by these cases, places where those principles are still playing out?
One area where we're seeing a lot of activity is in family law, especially cases involving same-sex marriage and child custody.
Oh, wow. That's a whole other complicated area. How does Hughes v. Fetter fit in there?
Well, you know, the legal landscape around LGBTQ plus rights has changed a lot in recent years. Same-sex marriage is now legal across the country, but there are still a lot of legal battles being fought about things like child custody and adoption, especially when families move from state to state.
Right, because states still get to decide a lot about things like parental rights, and those laws can be very different from one state to the next.
Exactly, and that's where Hughes v. Fetter and the whole idea of full faith and credit become really important. People are using these principles to argue that states have to recognize and uphold the parental rights of same-sex couples, even if those rights were first established in a state with more progressive laws.
So a same-sex couple who adopted a child in a state that recognizes their parental rights wouldn't have to worry about losing those rights if they move to a state that's not as supportive of same-sex families.
That's the argument, and courts across the country are starting to agree. Hughes v. Fetter is being used to fight for consistency and to protect the rights of families as they navigate a legal system that's still catching up to changing social norms.
It's like using the full faith and credit clause as a shield to protect families from discrimination when they move between states.
That's a great way to put it. And it highlights how a case that might seem very technical, you know, about a car accident from way back in 1951, can still have a huge impact on people's lives today. Hughes v. Fetter shows us that legal precedents can have these ripple effects that reach far beyond the people originally involved.
It's really amazing to see how the principles from this case are still shaping legal debates on so many different issues, from sovereign immunity to family law.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds us that legal history isn't just something in the past. It's always shaping what's happening now and in the future.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the big takeaways from our deep dive into Hughes v. Fetter. It's a case that reminds us that law is a living, evolving thing. It's always changing to meet new challenges.
Well, folks, that brings us to the end of our deep dive into Hughes v. Fetter. We've gone through the ins and outs of the case, the legal arguments, and how it's affected the legal system. We've seen how what started as a simple dispute about a wrongful death lawsuit has had this really big and lasting impact on how our system works, bringing up all these fundamental questions about the balance of power between states and the federal government.
It's been a fascinating exploration, and we hope you've gained a deeper understanding of this landmark case and why it still matters today. But remember, this is just the start of your own journey. There's always more to discover, more legal precedents to find, more puzzles to solve.
So keep those legal minds sharp, stay curious, and keep on diving deep.